Good evening and welcome to the Trundle Cast, our attic-based bizarre after dark delve into the Trundle Manor, the family-friendly house of oddities you never want to turn your back on. In this podcast, we'll show you why. I'm Mr. Arm, the proprietor and owner of Trundle Manor, and with us for the rest of the podcast forever is the other half of Trundle Manor, the muse, the beauty, and the soul, Ms. Velda von Minx.
Hello.
You could have given me a little bit more than that, baby, but I love you anyway.
Well, you pretty much said everything that there is to say about me.
We'll get in the swing of it.
Oh, yes.
So this is our very first podcast, and what we're doing right now is just trying to give you a little more of a glimpse into what Trundle Manor is. Also, if you can't handle swearing, please don't listen to this podcast.
We can't possibly censor ourselves.
Yeah, there's no way, shape, or form that we're going to be able to just tone all that down just for you. But I think it's going to be a fun little romp. We're going to talk about Friends of the Manor. We're going to talk about tours and how they work. We're going to talk about why we're podcasting in the first place.
Different events that we have happening. We always have something, and it's a good way to advertise.
Trundle Manor is constantly doing things, and I think that doing this podcast is going to give you guys a little bit more of a idea of why and what we're doing. We're not completely altruistic, but we're not complete villainous assholes. So I want you all to be able to feel that, and I hope that the listeners get that. What do you think?
I think so.
You think we can pull this off?
I don't want to say this humanizes us, but
maybe. Oh, for the love of God. If nothing else, it makes us more like gods. The music that you're listening to now is by Kevin MacLeod, and it was picked up off Incomputech, and it's some royalty-free music. And the future podcasts are going to be musically touched by Velda herself. She's more into this than I am.
Yeah, I'm going to find some public domain, probably old-timey 20s and 30s novelty music, or sort of like the kind of music we have on tour. Something happy and makes us feel like we're in one of those Max and Dave Fleischer cartoons with bobbly heads. I like to feel that way.
It just needs to be a background. It doesn't... It much like the tour music, we just want it to be there to fill in the gaps when we have no idea what the hell to say next. And I think we'll be able to do that with Velda's help, so that'll be good. Our very first podcast, we're podcasting. I think the reason that I wanted to do this, one is for another excuse to do something Trundle based, and the other thing is, like we said, it's because we want people to see what we're doing.
Well, this gets us comfortable talking about ourselves too, because we've done interviews, and we were on somebody else's podcast, Marta on the Move.
We're very not good at talking about
ourselves. God, we suck at talking,
because
that's why we drink our way through it.
Every time I say this little rhetoric, it's hilarious because it just counteracts itself, but we have a hard time talking about ourselves because we do so much stuff and so much cool things, and the people that we hang out with sometimes and the people that we talk to that do almost nothing with their lives and are so proud of the dumb little shit that they're
those are the people that are good at promoting themselves.
They spend all of their time promoting and talking about what they do.
We'd actually have money if we did that.
Yeah, I know. And We make so much cool shit. Velda does all of her amazing paintings, and she's a beautiful costumer. Anything that we go to, she ends up putting together. And I do sculpture and decoration,
metalwork,
anything with my hands, really, other than paint.
I sort of describe us on tours because I talk about your child magician setup, and I said you were the world's worst child magician, but you called yourself that because you were more concerned with how the trick actually worked than the showmanship aspect of it. And I say that makes a lot of sense now because we're mostly behind-the-scenes people instead of ever having become, actors or musicians or anything like that.
Yeah, we like creating our own world, and I think that has less to do with what other people take from it. Unfortunately,
we just live in that world, so we love doing that.
Yeah, because we grew up with nothing being good enough. Velda had to modify all of her clothing so it was cool enough for her to put on. And, you know, I had to make robots out of hot glue and and peanut butter jars.
Aw.
I did. That was my first
robot. Do you still have any of those? That sounds adorable.
No, I don't think so.
You should bring
I think
them to
about
a robot-themed birthday party next month.
Oh, that's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's April 25th. Mr. Arm and his new robot manservant Perkins will be celebrating their birthday.
It's more
together.
For him. It's less for me.
It is. So we're inviting all the neighborhood robots to come play with him.
Yeah. Perkins is an all-steel and metal creation of mine. He's more of a puppet. People ask if he moves on his own. He doesn't, but he's more of a puppet because I've shut off all his main systems. I just keep his life support going because I care about him so much that he needs to be able to compute those simple numbers for me if I need them done. But he's a beautiful manservant, and he served with me in the deepest depths of Swissvale's forest.
Yes.
Looking for specimens for Trundle Manor. But, it's just an excuse to have a birthday that isn't really mine.
Yes.
So, everybody dress like a robot and bring lots of robot lube, which we like to consider booze.
Robot lube. I like
robot
that.
Lube.
Yeah, you better specify, because we're going to have some weird people showing up.
Yeah, they might
things.
Actually bring robot lube. I assume that's some sort of a sexual
thing.
Hey,
Rule 34, there is something for everybody.
It's out there everywhere. I know there's tons of robot porn.
Meh.
Growing up, Dad had this.
Was it Arkrum? Before you even say
what. No, it wasn't Arkrum.
Okay.
It wasn't Arkrum.
Okay.
But Mom and Dad had, you know, they're both artists. So they, Dad was into comics and, you know, art. And we had lots of art books. So as a young boy, it opened up a lot of things. But but there was this one book that was really cool to me. And it was these, I think it was Japanese, the artist. But it was like in that big craze in the 80s. With the robots, and he did a few album covers,
actually.
Very cool. But they were like women robots that were all chrome, and he knew how to like draw chrome. And you know, going to industrial design school, they taught us how to do that kind of stuff because it was more about like, because way back when you had to sketch cars and show what the concept was, and this must have been how he learned how to do this stuff.
But sexy lady robots.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that was one of my books. That I adored.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, I think that helped me with my love of robots. It's the only thing that I can cry over, truly, is a robot dying.
Yeah, there are certain child robot movies that we can't watch.
Yeah.
We just don't.
Short Circuit.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even pull that off anymore.
Master of Short Circuit.
And the best is Batteries Not Included.
Oh, God.
They're so tiny and so cute, and one of them almost dies, and it is terrible.
Why would you make that happen? That's like having kittens die in a
kid's
movie.
So depressing.
Like, why?
Because, like, a human can fix itself and all
that stuff. Yeah, whatever. Baby's dying is, you know.
But, but, like, robots, if they're broken, they're broken. You can weld them, maybe, but.
All they can do is look at you with their sad robot eyes and beg you to fix them.
Moving on.
Yes.
I'm drinking one of Trundle Manor's favorite drinks.
Oh, rum the Trundle Special.
Rum and orange pop.
Diet Sunkist and Kraken rum.
Yeah, Diet Sunkist.
I just have stupid water because I'm giving tours all day. I would so much rather do this than do tours all day.
Hey, tell the folks what we have going on tonight.
Tonight, we are actually going next door to us, which I don't know if I should say.
Do it.
That, are we?
No one's going to hear this. Doesn't matter.
All right, next door to us. They're doing an immersive theater performance, which is it's a sort of new type of theater. We went to go see one like it in New York. It was called Sleep No More, where you basically walk around this set. And, well, that one was a little bit different. You could follow the actors around. This one is more, it's smaller. So there's, I think, a maximum of, 6 to 8? People
six,
per performance.
Six is what they booked, and then 8 is like
the overbooking.
That's what we're doing. We're the overbooking.
Okay. Yeah, well, they perform all around the house, and you just sort of follow. You don't talk, and they don't talk to you, but you're standing right there next to them and watching them do their thing, and it's a really unique experience. You really do step into their world. It's like the breaking the fourth wall sort of thing, which I love because I've always not lived in reality, and whenever I saw a play or a movie that I liked, I, you know, wish that I could be a part of it. So it's really fun to actually physically be there. But this is based on it's an insane asylum or purgatory. They don't really make it clear, but it's famous.
They say
insane
it's an asylum, but it definitely feels like
asylum is in the title.
Some sort
I think,
of death or something.
But they had their cast party at our house last week for their opening, so we get to see the full show. We saw the dry run before without costumes or anything, and now it's the actual setup. So that's 10:30 tonight. That's our big Saturday night event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the biscuit at the end of the maze for today. But it seems very cool, so we're very excited about that. And do you remember the name of it? It's
Professor Eldridge's Asylum for Uncanny and Spectacular Women. It's
very
something
long.
And something women. Yeah, it's a long ass title.
It's good. It's funny because when I looked at the title, I thought this is a very steampunk title.
Yeah,
It's very pompous.
Right, yeah,
and very
it could
full
be a
of names.
Band name their whole thing
that may exist, but you
like
don't
the
wanna,
men that would not be blamed for nothing.
Yeah, you don't want to question it because then, like, if you know, if you say who's Professor Eldritch, and they're like, you don't know, you stupid bitch. So you don't want to ask. So it's like the hipster conundrum is just putting out names.
Not that there's anything wrong with the men that would not be blamed.
Oh, no, no.
They're good friends of ours. Them, and no.
We'll touch on them later.
It's
I want
to
do
a Ripper reference.
I want
name,
you to
so.
Do a whole music podcast.
Oh, so God, we'll touch, I'd love to. We'll about people that we know and things we love.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
Because you remember names more than
yeah,
I do. So.
I do.
And it's, word of warning, it's going to be heavily laden with the damned.
It is. They're my favorite, so.
There's that.
Plenty of that. We'll put plenty of Tom Waits in there, too, for you. And absolutely. Yeah, that'll be fun.
So how about that? Speaking on terms like steampunk.
Oh, yeah.
Like we at Trundle Matter, we have so many different influences, right?
We really do. And people come in and, we don't get as many people coming for tours as we do on the street saying, oh, are you into steampunk? Yeah. Are you guys goth or whatever? I mean, because I think if they want to come here, then they at least realize that we're very varied in what we love.
Yeah. Sometimes they say steampunk, but
I hear that a lot. I mean, but some of the things are, aesthetically steampunk based.
It is. I was happy that steampunk became a thing because I like the aesthetic. Then I realized that the vast majority of them are just really socially awkward people.
Yeah, yeah, we're hoping that it was
which is okay. It's just, it's hard for us to deal with.
Socially awkward people need a home, too, absolutely. Yeah. And I can't say that we're not socially awkward at times, but we were just hoping,
good.
No, we're the cool guys.
Yeah, we're fine. Hey, we grew up greasers and rockabilly chicks.
Rockabilly is my default standard no matter what, so.
Rockabillys are nothing but social creatures.
You know, we were talking about it at work the other day, and I hope this doesn't offend anybody that we know, but China and I were talking about how people kind of take it too far sometimes with rockabilly. There's a lot of people we know that in their 20s and 30s, they decided to just become old people and, well, let's go to bed at 9:30. I don't want to make my grandma's pierogi recipe and, spend all night coloring my hair or whatever,
Because that's like an old-fashioned thing? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like, I mean, we love the visual, the cars and the clothing and the music and all
that
kind of stuff.
I like the original attitude of what rockabilly was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of
it's sexy.
I always said when I was growing up, there were two different things. There's, I was a greaser. There's rockabilly and there's greasers. And, now I attribute myself more to the greaserdom. And, but I think back then I wanted to be rockabilly, but I was too dirty to do that.
Yeah, those were...
Because I was into fixing things. I was into the cars. That's what got me into it.
Yeah.
And the music, And that was always like that dirty, grimy nature of things.
Yeah.
And,
they're like the white trash kids who have to make everything themselves.
Well, that's what greasers were. They're, they're heavily white trash kids.
I mean, some of that rockabilly clothing is beautiful, but you can't go underneath a car in a pink gabardine suit or whatever. Ugh. I mean, shit.
No, my salmon-colored gabardine shirt.
Yes, I'm sorry, salmon.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
That would not have fared very well underneath Trixie.
No.
When I was replacing her engine. But,
I mean, it makes sense with Trixie, too, because we don't have a shiny,
Yeah, you can't really get in Trixie with something that's beige or white because you will get out filthy and terrible. That's as clean and as well done as she is, she's still filthy.
Oh yeah, she's always. I mean, it's in her nature. Mm-hmm. She's a dirty girl.
But Trixie is my 52 Dodge truck.
Oh yeah,
that was essentially my first vehicle. And growing up, I redid her three different times from the ground up, and she started the Drifters Car Club and started, a lot of things in my life. So, that's what Trixie is. If you come for a tour, you'll see
Absolutely.
Trixie for sure.
Trixie is the reason that I met Mr. Arm.
You can say started stalking.
A little bit, yeah. I used to go to car shows with my dad, and there was one downtown that back when he had the Drifters, everybody had sort of a flat black rat rod type, mm-hmm. you know, it was like walking into Crybaby. I said, who the hell are these people? You know, because I grew up loving rockabilly, but there was no scene for it when I fell in love with it. I was just a weird kid that listened to the oldie station and you know, used to watch 50s juvenile delinquent movies all the time. I had no idea that it was an actual thing that people, young people, still appreciated, you know?
Yeah.
I was used to seeing just the typical old guy in his lawn chair, mm-hmm. you know, old fat, sitting there drinking beer all day, old guys at car shows. I had no idea that young people were into it. So that was really sort of enchanting for me. Like, who are you? I need to meet these people.
Well, I started the Drifters when I was 17, when I first bought Trixie. Man, a friend mm-hmm. of mine, Ace Brown, started the Drifters haphazardly while pounding the marine plywood bed of Trixie into mm-hmm. into her frame with a sledgehammer. But we started it because we got tired. We loved cars, and we liked car shows, but we just felt out of place because a lot of the guys were that. A lot of the guys were like older dudes that finally had enough cash to buy the car that they wanted when they were a kid.
And then they do everything completely stock and
They make it stock.
As it was when it was a kid.
You know, which, you know, we weren't into. We were into art.
We
were into being creative with the things that we had. And it just turned out that the paint that we could afford was flat black. And we ended up thinking that it just looked badass. So we kept with the flat black.
It's like the punk rock version of hot rods, you know? Like, you do what you can and
it's
what you can
afford. It's unfortunately moved into this terrible world of now the guys that were doing that are painting their beautifully pre-painted cars flat black. And it's embarrassing because it's like, no, we did flat black because we can't afford like a sweet ass paint job. You know, well, don't fucking paint your paint.
It's like a millionaire starting a punk band. Like you were musically trained. You can do whatever the hell you want. Don't just bash on things because you think it's cool. It's not for you.
Let the kids that earned that do it.
Yeah.
You know? Don't take that over. So we got a lot of that stuff. But yeah, the Drifters are my original, the Devil Boys first, and then the Hellions, and then the Drifters eventually.
Yeah.
We were like crybaby greasers.
I mean,
we rode around in one car because half the time our cars were broken.
Yeah, which is why you see that in movies.
Yeah, it is. It's not that they didn't own one. They just had broken cars constantly.
Yeah.
And projects going on.
Couldn't afford to fix them.
And, you know, and we'd go. I didn't drink at the time, so we'd go to Tom's Diner and sit around and drink coffee and eat pizza sticks. And, you know, and eventually we'd go out to bars, but we'd go to rockabilly shows because we have a lot of, you know, a big rockabilly scene in Pittsburgh.
There was. I don't know if there was so much 90s. Anymore. Like early 2000s, I'd say, because I got in at the very tail end of it. But yeah, oh god, it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in high school, like I would, you know, wear my leather jacket to school and pencil skirts and Angora sweaters and have my red lipstick on. I thought I was hot. People probably thought I looked like their grandmother. I thought it was intimidating boys, but they probably just thought it was fucking weird, which is just as well, because they didn't dress like greasers. And
moving back to the original story is how
really got
why Velda. Yeah, I know why Velda. You know, first started stalking me.
Right.
And I guess she'd come to the World of Wheels, which we always set up at because it was fun to just get together for all weekend.
Yeah.
And be indoors.
But I was too shy to say anything. I didn't know anybody. I just kind of hung around and
She has pictures of Trixie in her infancy.
Yeah. All three stages of Trixie I got to see.
And you know, that I think that's what solidifies us is the fact that you got to see her in all her forms, because it would be weird if you didn't.
Yeah, it would be
You'd
weird.
You'd be like, I don't know what that looked like. You'd be like, yeah, I know. I almost touched it.
<You know? laughs> Probably did.
Yeah. And, but she got to see what I was way back when, and before Trundle Manor, when I was just a greaser. And,
Trundle had very little to do with, you didn't do it.
Yeah.
Then. But
I was still living in an apartment probably when you first, I might have been living at home when you first saw me.
That's possible. I don't know. Right. I don't know exactly what the
I was living.
Was.
I,
don't
know,
I was 17.
All of college. So.
Okay, that makes
sense.
It would
be like 2001 until 2004.
I think this was like 2006, maybe I first came around.
Maybe I had an apartment. I don't know.
Yeah, it was probably before you got the house. But no, thanks to the internet, I realized that I could follow his move and stalk him, I guess, a bit. Hey, they make it easy. Social media makes it easy.
Well, that's
I didn't have bad intentions.
I don't think in the future we're going to have anyone that didn't meet on social media to some extent.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was a weird thing to say when we started dating, but I guess that is going to be
standard. Yeah, we're very into the old way to do things. But
I could have telegrammed him, I would, but they stopped doing that. So.
I'm sure you can hire someone to do that. Anyway.
That's true.
But
I found out that he was doing Trundle Manor. I said, oh, he's a creep too? Get myself invited over here.
Yeah, and it was unfortunate because I told her, I feel bad because Velda's past, nobody really understood her because in her school there were no rockabillys. In her, you know, she hung out with older dudes, which I don't, there was one that was, Lucky was kind of that way.
Yeah, but I mean,
not really.
Yeah, I grew up around older people that liked the same things as me.
Yeah.
You know, my parents would drop me off for some reason at the pub that they would show old bad movies at, and I didn't drink in those days either. So they knew I was, you know, I wasn't doing anything seedy with these old men. We would just sit there and watch movies.
But wasn't much to do with there. But, that's why I always felt bad because she tells me about these things, and I think, like, I could have been your white knight. I could have... You know, I would have loved you immediately. I fell in love with her immediately as soon as I saw her.
Yeah.
And not just because of her, you know, 20-some-inch waist and giant ass. Well, proportionate.
Yes.
Giant. But not just because of her curves is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I always maintained that if I wanted to, I could have been the slutty goth girl from The Craft. Remember,
well, you didn't need that.
I didn't want that.
I'm glad you didn't do that.
No.
Obviously, because... you know, untainted meat and all that. But I, you know, I just really liked that we meshed so well together.
Sure.
On the first meeting.
Yeah, I mean, we had so much in common. I'm not going...
I just wish that it happened sooner, that's all.
Yeah,
I wish that I was untainted meat.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me feel bad.
Taking me to prom or whatever.
I didn't have a lot of girlfriends, but, you know, I just feel bad that I started with a horrible...
You know, teenage girls.
Yeah.
Doing
what
are
you gonna do? I'm a teenage boy.
Of course.
I needed more than you did.
Yeah, I guess so. No, it always meant more to me that somebody has things in common with me. If you don't have good hair and you don't watch horror movies, don't talk to me. Anytime you know somebody at work or somebody on the bus tries to flirt with me, I'm like, you breathe, don't you? Do you have a pulse? You can stop now. I'm going away.
Yeah, it's. You know, and I actually, our first date, let's talk about that.
Let's go on
to that. Why not?
Love at first slice, we like to call it. Yeah. So I was going to come to the house with, like, I think it was my ex or friends of mine. And
I wasn't giving tours at the time. She just,
there's
right?
something on
you
the
just
website
kind of found
said
out about it. Available. Did I have the website?
You had the website in a primitive form of it. And you said that we are available for tea parties or something. I think you were trying to cater to the steampunk kids. And I had some friends who were into that. So I said, hey, let's, you know, make an appointment or whatever and talk to this guy. And they all bailed and, you know, kids being kids,
well,
didn't quite get it, what I was trying to advertise.
Well, here, the backstory on my side, too, is that, you know, she set up this little meeting so her friends could come over. And this was back in the days of MySpace. So I looked up her MySpace profile and that, you know, that was the first tinge of, you know, I think I was single for... Maybe a couple weeks? A couple months? I was already a couple months?
I think so, because we met in November. It was after...
I'm a very clingy bastard. Yeah, I have a hard time living alone. But I think I was dealing with that whole situation. And you know, I tried to go to bars with friends, and I tried to, you know...
Oh, sure. It was just a coincidence that you happened to advertise on MySpace that you were single, and I happened to notice it. Such a coincidence.
But when she contacted me, I saw her profile and just her photos and her... Velda's quite unusual looking. She doesn't look like any other girl that I've ever heard of. And it was just so... She was so intriguing to me, both on what she liked and what she looked like. And
yeah, so, I mean, I always made it my goal to sort of live in a movie, so...
Yeah, when she said that she her friends bailed and she didn't have a ride...
I don't trust.
I immediately jumped in whatever the hell car that I had at the time and drove the half an hour to pick her up.
Yeah, so people always ask on tours or whatever, how did you guys meet? I said, I literally, if I'm being honest, met him on the way to his house. So I guess I was a trusting person, I don't know. And somebody tried to say, like, oh, look at all those jars. They go, oh, what if he kills you and stuffs you in a jar? I said, well, if it's an hourglass-shaped jar, I'll be fine. What a way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of the collection. Well, she is part of the collection now, but...
Oh, it could have been a very undignified death.
We're going to continue this story in a bit, as we might not have said. This is Saturday, yep. And it is our busy tour day, and yep. I just got a text from one of our tours that Velda's not answering the door.
Oh, so, I can't even hear the door from up here.
Nope, so oh, we have headphones on. So I'm going to send her down, and I think we're going to pick it up with... we're going to pick it up later and talk more about our little love story and how awesome it is.
Yeah.
And how awesome we are. So give us a little bit of time and we'll come right back to all you.
Right. I was wondering when they were going to show up.
Did you ever get on Creepypasta?
I think he has.
But you can sit there for like 6 hours.
Yeah. I have Tumblr, which is just like people, they can post whatever.
Okay, we're here with one of our first, with our very first artist for this year at Trundle Manor, and it's a little bit of a surprise thing, so we thought we'd throw her on mic just for the shit and giggle of it all, and just see how this works out. So I'm going to turn up your mic, and feel free to introduce yourself, if you wouldn't mind. Yes.
Yeah. My name's Sharon Bergmark. These people are nice enough to give me a show.
We're very happy to have her.
In like 3 weeks. So.
Yeah, this will be the first art show this season for Trundle Manor. Opening and all that stuff.
Sorry, I was drinking some booze.
I can't sustain that. I'm going to drive home, so I'm not drinking.
But why don't you tell us a little bit about the type of art that you do?
Okay, the type of art I'm doing now is mostly line drawing, pen and ink. And that's because I live in a shithole apartment and I can't afford a studio. So I used to paint and do other things. Now it's affordable, pens and paper. I can lay on the floor and draw because I don't have any furniture. And the drawings that I do are bizarre. A lot of sex, a lot of darkness.
Perfect for Trundle Manor.
Yeah, perfect for Trundle Manor.
Every show we've ever had has been kind of twisted or dark or sexy.
Yeah, I'm really, last time, the only time I was here, you had a, somebody showed up and tied up their girlfriend. And so I'm hoping my show, somebody will show up and tie up their boyfriend.
I think we can make that happen.
Yeah, I want that to happen.
If you want a guy tied up, I think that we know a few twinks that might be kind of good for that.
Oh,
what
sure.
You think?
Tie up a girl, yeah, sure, tie up we'll find a guy. Someone. It's all the same to me.
Well, we've never done a guy, so I think that'd be kind of fun. So maybe we'll try that.
If they,
I guess he hasn't, huh?
No. I don't think he'd be against it.
No, I'm sure he does.
He's pretty, Russ.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty free flowing. So that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of, what's his name? Bill Flanagan. Flanagan.
Bob
Flanagan. He was a performance artist. He was the longest lived cystic fibrosis patient, and he and his wife did a lot of S&M performances. So they did somebody decided to film him, and he died the year that they were filming him. So his death is on the film. It's a great documentary called Sick.
That sounds very familiar.
Is it on Netflix or something?
It might be.
Come across it?
That sounds very familiar.
Okay, Sick. Yeah, I'd like to see that.
It's, well, I actually have it, if you want to borrow it.
Yeah,
but, cool.
Bob Flanagan, yeah, he and his wife did a piece called Autopsy.
Okay.
And he lay on an autopsy table, and she, you know, she sliced his penis, and she had, she talked about his body while she was doing it.
Wow,
and she
that's
cut him
awesome.
And, yeah, it's great. So we don't have to go that far, but...
Well, we can have that playing if you want on the... On the
That'll
projector.
Be great.
You want to do it?
Yeah.
I'm good for that.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Does it loop? Does it run
I
loop?
Can figure out how to make it loop.
Okay,
I'm
I'll
sure.
Bring
yeah.
that for sure.
How long do you think it is?
It's
like maybe in...
probably like an hour and 40 minutes. It's a full length movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you mean downstairs on the...
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be
great.
Cool.
Okay, good. I'll bring that.
Yeah. We'll put it in front of that big cabinet. That's where the projector is.
Okay, that's good.
Plays.
Yeah,
that'd
that's
be cool.
Good. So anyhow, that's what...
One thing taken care of.
Yes. Check.
You don't have to worry about anything on the projector. Mm. There you go.
That's how it comes together. That's how these shows come together.
Yeah.
Because we're open to like trying anything. That's why Mia was the girl that did the photography. Me and Sam Thorpe, and they did the fetish nights, the one that you probably came to with the tying up and stuff.
Right.
And they said, "Can we do this?" I'm like, "You can do anything. I don't care.
This
sounds like fun. Do
kept
it."
Kept saying in all the reviews too, like that. they're doing stuff here that other galleries would turn away, you know. Mm. Like, they can get sort of dark in a way that they hadn't before, and sacrilegious. The first show they did, they had some, I don't know, religious-themed things, I think. But, yeah.
I think it was just a nun or something. I think they played that up a little
They more. Did. I mean, yeah, you know, hype or whatever. But I like being that for people, you know?
Yeah,
we have no boundaries.
Because that's the underground. I feel like the underground is... People have tried too much to bring it to the surface, so it's not underground anymore.
It should stay underground.
And it's not fun. Like, I grew up with my dad being into R. Crumb and, you know, the underground comics and that kind of stuff.
I can bring that, too. I also have the documentary Crumb.
I love that documentary.
I actually haven't seen that one.
Really?
Yet. Yeah.
It's so, well.
I'd love
awesome.
To.
Being a Crumb. I have a Crumb Girl statue, numbered statue, that's like one of my coveted items. You know?
The schoolgirl.
The schoolgirl, yeah.
Yeah, with her ass in the air. Uh-huh. At the beginning of that movie, he has all of these old wooden spools. Do you remember that? And it's the old blues music is playing, and the camera is panning over all of these old spools that he had done drawings on and paintings on of, like, people's faces and stuff. And
I don't remember the spools.
Well, I'll bring...
I watched that, like, at least three times
I'll
in
bring
my life.
It, and just... I was just like, if I could just have one of those spools, I'd be so happy.
Yeah.
You know, that would have the place of honor. This is my daughter.
Grab a chair.
So, I'll bring Crumb too. So cool. We could do that.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites because I grew up with the underground comics. Because I loved comics, but I didn't like Marvel or like I liked Batman, but I wasn't into just. You know, the...
Any Batman thing.
Yeah, just, it had to be kind of a weird Batman thing. The Joker was big for me. But it was all like Ralph Snart and just like these terrible underground comics. Like, of my era, underground comics weren't as sexy as they were like when my dad was younger.
Yeah, because the 60s stuff is really...
But I grew up with like my dad's comics being that coveted, like, I'm a young boy, this stuff's kind of hot. You know, but... Like, that was my first version of a woman, was an R. Crumb girl. And it was, like, the curves and the big legs and, you know, and
well, he talks about
and it was so much more life than what the other comics were.
Right.
It was so much more fun.
Well, that's one of the things that's awesome about, I think that every thick girl who has ever hated her body should watch this movie.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You come away from feeling, like, I was always really,
like,
really, really thin. And then in my 40s, I got, like, really, really, really fat. And anytime I would get, like, really to the point where I was like, oh, God, I hate my body, I would think about R. Crumb.
Yeah.
And
oh,
it's like,
that's
there,
cool.
Yeah, well, there are people out there that...
Yeah.
Did he end up with women that look like that, too?
Well,
I guess...
He's married to a woman, Aileen Crumb, and she's a, she's a big girl. Well, of course, now this movie was like...
You remind me of her somewhat. I think there's something about that, like, old era.
That big, Jewy kind of But she, they're old now. I mean, they're
in France now. He moved
to
France.
Yeah, they're in France. And I know at the end of the movie, he had traded a whole bunch of his sketchbooks for a house in France.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And they couldn't wait to get there, right? So then they got there, and then a couple of years, they did a Crumb show at Carnegie Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And he included a lot of his original drawings from the French thing. So he would often portray his wife as a pig. So there's this little pig sitting on this on this couch. Now they're in France, and she's like, Bob! You know, all these French women are so skinny, I can't find any clothes to fit me. And so she was bitching about being in America. And his daughter's an artist.
What a strange place for him to move to.
As far as people go.
Yeah.
He said...
It's great. It's living the dream, though, I guess, for a lot of people.
So strange, though.
Yeah. Trade your work
France.
For
France.
Fucking house
out of
France.
Everything. You
and
go
I'm
to,
thinking, do they
You can go to
French?
Italy with, like, the nice... thick where you can go to, you know, Spain
yeah,
with
France,
the curves.
France I would not associate.
You go to France, which are all sick
women.
People.
Yeah.
At least that's the way I see them.
Well, I guess he you know, he's getting old and, you know, he's
see
not
now,
looking for pussy
apparently.
Anymore anyhow.
Yeah.
And let me speak as a man. We're always looking for pussy.
Well, I don't know. How old are you?
Don't worry about it.
You're still very young.
695 years old.
But, he said, one of the last things that he said on the film was, like, they were like, well, why are you going to France? And he said, well, France is just slightly less evil than the United States, and that was his reason. That's what he said. So, but now his daughter Sophie does cartooning.
Yeah,
and she did some funny stuff about her parents coming to visit her in New York City, and she just portrays her mother as this old Jewish loud, you know, and her dad is this like schlumpy guy who. It just embarrasses her.
Which is funny, because everybody else knows him as that, but kid of famous people, like, fuck his parents.
Yeah. This is R. Crumb. You have no... Yes, he is all of those things, but he's also R. Crumb.
Right.
You know, he sparked a generation of debauchery, and, you know, you have to love him for all of his grossness.
Yeah.
And every time I saw... He draws himself quite well with that very, like, big Adam's apple, skinny, gross... That's exactly how he comes off.
Well, he is.
Like, in my head, that's all I can remember
him
being.
He's not an attractive man, you know, but at one point in the movie, one of the women that he used to date, she's a pornographer, and she says, you know, when he draws himself and he draws that gigantic penis, he does not, what's the word?
Exaggerate
anything. He is possessed of the biggest penis.
Is it always that way?
Well, so is Ron Jeremy, you know, the least attractive
like
people.
Gross, terrible people have giant penises.
That's another thing I have.
Not that my, I don't
the legend
talk
of
about
Ron
mine,
Jeremy.
I think that I'm floating on the lines of good looking and terrible looking, so I'd like to consider myself average.
I would not put you in the class of people who look like Ron Jeremy and aren't
prom
and have big dicks.
No.
But not by a long shot.
Well, you know, in pornography, there are a lot of women that are like, I'll do anything, but I will not work with Ron Jeremy.
Yeah.
And he says it, you know.
Yeah.
There's a documentary I have called The Legend of Ron Jeremy. And he's like, yeah, there are women that just say, I won't work with him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just gross and fat and sweats. And
when we went to New York, we went to the Museum of Sex, and they had a display of Deep Throat. It was all about like
Linda Lovelace's personal life too,
and how terrible
it was,
like, her
the saddest
marriage
thing.
Was.
I have that documentary too.
Yeah,
I'll bring all of this stuff.
Yeah,
Are they on DVDs though? Because that's
yeah,
okay,
they're on
good.
DVD. The Ron Jeremy one is not; it's VHS.
Okay,
because we don't have a work. I've bought them, and they eat every single tape I put in.
Yeah,
them,
we just
so
stopped.
I just gave
losing
up.
All our tapes.
It's sad. I have so many great tapes there.
You're right.
I know that, like,
my dad's R. Crumb is a tape.
No,
so I'd never be able
DVD,
to play.
I got everything off of Amazon. I went, you know, I used to have them on DVD or VHS, but I have Sick and that and Deep Throat.
This would be great to have on a loop up here or something too. But
yeah, so this talk is good. I'm glad that we brought you up because I, you know, in the beginning of the podcast, we said we're going to show you, you know, the dark side of Trundle Manor and what we get up to after dark and all the horrible things. And then we talked about, you know, how much we love people and we're good people.
Yeah, we did. We got really lovey and sweet right after the talk.
And I'm glad that we brought you up because it moves you into people realizing that we do a lot of strange and a lot of debaucherous and a lot of unusual things, and we're open to almost everything. We're just happy about it, and that's why it comes off as not being bad.
Well, it took me many years to get here. I grew up. I was born in 1960.
I'm glad that you found the manor. When was the first? Did you come here just for
My
the art show? Or?
Okay. No, she had come for a B&D show.
Oh.
I don't know. She showed me pictures. Somebody, he trussed up a girl.
Okay,
and
that might have been one
her.
Of Mia's shows. Yeah.
And so she.
That was probably the first fetish show.
I was
going to
go come,
yeah,
and I ended up not coming. And she kept shooting me texts like, "Look what you're missing! Look what you're missing!"
Yeah.
And then, I think she talked to you and said, "You know, my sister does like art that would, it's kind of like this." And so then I did come to the one closing that you did.
Yeah.
The two women.
Yeah, and you brought some really good pieces
stuff
there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Look at.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've only been here once, but I love this place. I can't believe you get to come here every day.
We get to sleep here.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's people ask that all the time. Like, oh, is it weird? It literally has become a normal thing, you know. But I love it.
Well, this is
I couldn't imagine doing anything
else.
My
daughter, and she can tell you, like, my house is very tiny, and I don't have like a lot of stuff, but it's sort of a microcosm of this place. I have just everywhere you look, there's just weird shit. And I make myself happy. I don't care what anybody thinks. Mm-hmm.
That's what we do too, yeah. You know.
Well, we said the manor would be here whether people saw it or not. We're just lucky that people appreciate it, you know. It's
well, we started we didn't know that people would want to come for tours. Because he does all the graphic stuff, and he likes making up brochures, so he did
it's not like I'm paying for a graphic designer. Because I went to school for photography, so I was able to use that to promote the manor, and I was able to just... When I was young, I used to make business cards just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like doing graphic design, and we started passing out brochures just random places.
Just to see what happened. I mean, it kind of came about organically, really. Yeah. We don't
it's all word of mouth. I've had advertisers contact us, and I say, I don't want more people walking through my house. I'm good.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah,
advertise me.
Yeah. Well, you know, you do what you need to. You gotta. I know that some of the people that I've told about the show coming up, are like, oh, that's a great place for your work. So they know you that I didn't know you, you know?
Yeah.
I can't believe I've never heard of this place because I've always just been just a little weirdo.
Yeah.
What? That's what we like too. Is you have to stumble on it. You know, I don't want to shove it in people's faces. You know, I feel like Toronto Manor is more special if you get to stumble on it and you get to experience it for yourself. And that's the same reason we do tours all by appointment, and we don't ever double book tours. It's always your own experience.
Yeah, because we like to cause wonderment in people, too. Like, there's not enough of that.
You show up with,
so
like, another group of people, then you're not going to have your experience. You're going to have a group experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want that.
Right.
I want you to bring people.
A bunch of strangers. Yeah, it's different.
I want you to bring people that you're going to enjoy seeing something with. That's it.
I think you guys are doing is perfect. There's definitely a need for this place.
Yeah, I wish more people did a similar thing. I mean, you know, not in direct competition or anything.
Oh, no, I'd have to burn them down.
Oh, yeah, I know. Of course, But the whole idea of inviting somebody into your world kind of thing. I'd like to see other people's version of it, you know?
Yeah.
I want to see
it
from the other side.
This, you know, I've always walked around my whole life just feeling like a freak and being treated like one, you know? Until I finally learned to just hate myself. And
it's sad that you internalize that stuff because other people can't appreciate you.
Well, I think, you know, it was the times too.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, people weren't friendly to... Well, I think I wrote the artist bio. I said, you know, it didn't take long for me to realize that the world was cruel to creepy little people like me.
Yeah.
But the first time that I really felt where, like, wow, I totally belong here was one of the Atrocity Show.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I was, like, 49 years old. It took that long for me to walk into a place...
And find your home.
...where I just felt so good. And this is another place. Like, I walked in, and I knew that, like, these were my people.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, so I get to die having had that experience, because I know that a lot of people go to their grave, like...
Yeah.
I think about that, too, sometimes. Yeah. Some people never find their soulmate. They never find, you know, what makes them happy. They never find their tribe of people. And, God, that's so sad.
Or they just die thinking, you know, I'm the only one that is this bizarre.
Yeah.
So, I feel happy that even though it took me 50 years, I will go to my grave knowing that there were people even weirder than me. That aren't serial killers.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
You know.
But,
to each their own.
I'm really glad that I found this. I'm glad you gave me a chance to have a show.
We're very happy that you found us too. I mean, I really love your art, and that's why I was glad to bring up the crumb thing, because your stuff reminds me of, you know, not to put a time on it, but it reminds me of, like, that era of art that I grew up with. You know, my dad's era of art, and I loved that so much. And I felt like people got away from that because they were creating things for a purpose. Like, I feel like you're creating art because you want to create art, which a lot of people don't do anymore. Like, I feel like it's everybody does something for a purpose nowadays, and that loses the actual reason for art to be. You know, Van Gogh, he made stuff to try to sell it. He didn't fucking sell it, but he kept doing it because he wanted to, you know? And, you know, and the way you talk about, like, not getting what you want for your art, and that's, you know, but you still do it, and that's... To me, that's the important part of art, you know?
Yeah. And
when I saw your stuff, it reminded me of that feeling that I used to have when I was a kid.
I
love it.
I'm so glad. I grew up, I really didn't have a lot of friends, and I kind of would bounce from group to group of friends because, like, they would get sick of me and that would be it. Yeah. And then I moved on.
I understand.
But, yeah.
they were all, like, most of them artists, and I would always compare myself and say, well, you know, I'm not an artist because I don't draw like that. Whatever. So, mostly I wrote poetry. That's what I did. And I would draw, like, little things, but I would just throw all that stuff away. And it wasn't until I was 36... And her dad, I had met my daughter's father, and he saw me crumpling up some drawings and throwing them away. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, just throwing away garbage. He goes, no, you have to start saving this.
Yeah.
Good.
So at the age of 36, he bought me this thing to start gluing my drawings into.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I would never draw into a sketchbook because I just never felt that it was good enough.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I assigned some meaning to it.
Yeah.
And so now the art that I do, I write very little. I do still write some poetry, but you'll see in my art, a lot of my art, I incorporate the text of my life.
Yeah.
Numbers. I have like a system of numbers in my head that are incorporated into the drawing. So it's my art is actually like a journal.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say it felt that way looking through your sketchbook.
Yeah, sure.
It's so personal.
It almost felt like there was like a day in each one, at least a day in each one of those art pieces.
Well, it's really like some of my bigger pieces will start with, for instance, I have like a real interest in like serial killers.
Yeah.
So I would
like this place.
I do like this place. So, because I work so much and I don't have a lot of time to read and draw, sometimes I read and draw.
Yeah.
So I'll get my serial killer book and I'll be reading it and I'll be doing a piece about serial killers and I'll put the numbers and the words from the book into the drawing. And then, because the drawing's so elaborate, like 2 weeks later, I'll be reading a book about, you know, a midwife in 1700s.
Yeah.
And so it will be, then it will incorporate that too. So my stuff is really kind of mercurial. There's
like
so many things in one piece, but it all means something to me. You know?
Yeah.
I felt kind of voyeuristic almost looking through it. Because you very much do it for you, and I think that's cool. Because a lot of people will do something that they think is commercial or that other people will like their art, but yours is very much...
We're in a weird era of art where you can just it's almost furthering Andy Warhol's style where you can make nothing a piece of art, you know, where Jean-Michel Basquiat he made beautiful paintings, but there are also things that he just signed and that was his art, you know, and unfortunately I think that we're furthering that, so we're getting out of technique for artwork. And so it's all about the explanation nowadays, you know, it's go ahead, Donna.
Okay.
Velda has to go do another tour. I'm going to keep prattling while you guys stare at me.
But, I don't want to, you know, take up too much
time. Oh, no, you're okay. Well, I'm going to be up here anyway, so I'll just keep you for as long as I want. but I feel like artwork's all about the explanation nowadays, which is terrible, but, it's only because it's without sustenance. It's without substance. The modern art. I actually saw a piece that was quote-unquote piece that was different colored masking tape that would stretch from the ceiling to the floor, and that was the whole piece. And they left it on the reel. And I'm sure that they got some kind of grant for that, which just kills me.
Exactly.
That kills me. And I'm sure that if I talked to that artist, which I would never fucking do because I don't give two shits about their art, that they would have some elaborate explanation for what they do. But your work has this elaborate explanation that's built into it. And it only furthers the art to hear what was the reason for you making it. Whereas, you know, like I can look at it and enjoy it and take something from it myself without talking to you or reading anything about it. But then when I talk to you, I do get more, which is just so, like, that's hard to do nowadays, you know? Because nowadays it's either you create something and don't talk about it, or you create nothing and talk nothing more than about it. you know, and you've pulled like two of these things together in a way that used to be, and I don't want to make it seem like you have an old style of art. That's not what I'm doing. It's just, that's the art that I grew up with. So I appreciate it and I love it. And I feel like we need to get back to it. And I was so excited to see your work and hear you talk about it.
Thank you.
That I'm really glad. That's Thanks. Why I keep pushing you to do this show well, you know, because I think it's really cool.
Well, you know, it's funny, you were talking about the masking tape. I don't know. Have you ever read Breakfast of Champions?
Like, I've heard of it.
Kurt Vonnegut. In one part, there's like a big art symposium that's going on. Like, so the one guy is like on a pilgrimage to get there. Anyhow, so there's these artists are sitting around in this bar in a hotel, I think it was. And the one artist was famous for taking canvases and painting them like all one color, and then taking like a strip of fluorescent tape, you know, and like,
I think I've seen his work.
Yeah, me too, a million times. I think it's like, what, 500,000
in the Carnegie Museum of Art.
Oh yeah, my God, right? But, and he knows he's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody in the at the bar is like all drunk, comes up to him and says, "Oh, you know what you do is bullshit. You know, I could do that." So he comes up with this explanation. You know, it took me like 30 years of suffering to culminate into this. You know, and it's funny because he knows that he's full of shit, but it's true. I was in Chicago few years ago, and I went into this gallery. It was like one of the most pretentious galleries I have ever seen.
Yeah.
So you walk in, it's just like this big empty space, and a spiral staircase that goes upstairs with this like snotty little asshole sitting at a desk. The artist that they were showing, he took plastic, like fast food, clear plastic, like fast food lids,
mm-hmm.
right? And he drizzled paint into them, and they were hanging everywhere. So, and you know, I don't look like, I guess, what you would think an artist would look like. So, especially back then, I was a skinny little thing. But so I'm looking at the shit and I'm laughing because it was just shit.
Uh-huh.
And the prices on this stuff was amazing. Like the cheapest thing was like $3,000. He took some fucking paint and he drizzled it into a piece of garbage. So I came down and I said something snarky to the guy that was there, and you know, his attitude was like, well, you know, peasants don't understand.
Right. The king's new clothes. Yeah, exactly. It's exactly that.
And
that's
like,
what art,
that
you can boil modern art down into that, you know.
Yeah.
I appreciate some of it. You know, some of it does like put you into a situation, which is kind of cool. But like if he had understood how bullshit his stuff was and that was the art piece, that might be kind of cool.
Exactly. Very conceptual. And that concept, I would go for that. And I get Art in America magazine. I've been getting it for like 30 years. And I always say, I'm not going to renew my subscription. But right. I end up doing it every year. So, but there's a few of my pieces that I will get my Art in America magazine. And I will lie down on my bed because, like I said, I don't have any furniture. So that's
You make me sad. Stop saying that. I will give you furniture.
Oh, I don't want furniture. I had furniture. I threw it away.
Okay.
Right, Jude?
I have some furniture. You know,
that's like, I love laying on the floor. I'm a floor layer.
Okay.
And so, you know, I lay in my bed and draw. So I'll lay there and I'll pick out all of the bullshit words. There's nothing funnier than an art, like a criticism.
Yeah.
Like people...
when they try to explain what they saw, right.
And you're like, where the fuck did that come from? You pretentious asshole. So I'll like write the real pretentious stuff, and like I'll do a piece about like pretension in the art world.
Yeah.
You won't know that's what it is, but that I know that's what it is. But yeah, I agree.
I say that the best artists never get noticed because they're busy making art instead of talking about their art. And that's the biggest issue. And because growing up with my parents, it taught me so much about what actual art is, you know. Their work that they do is, it's for churches, and they're, you know, they get no recognition. Because the priest doesn't say, oh, Suzanne and David Mariello made these beautiful paintings that you're crying over, you know. Instead, it's just, oh yes, look at these God's paintings. It's the only reason that I can't fully commit to their company, you know, because it's there's no recognition. I feel like artists should always get recognition. Michelangelo is well known for doing the Sistine Chapel, and that was a religious piece. Why shouldn't my parents get known?
Well,
for that,
you know, because God is actually, you know, working through them, and so God deserves. Why should they get the
blah 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 blah?
They are just
exactly.
You know, they're being moved by God, and you know, the priest, you know, actually, you know, the priest, isn't he like God's ear? Right?
We get a lot of people that when they come for a tour of our studio, they say, so do you pray before you paint? And my parents have just gotten to the point where they say, yeah, just because they just tell them what they want to know, because people don't understand if you try to explain something. You know, it's their religion. It's a thing. You know, you need to respect it to some extent. But as an artist, it drives me fucking insane, because all that I want is to say, like, my parents are amazing artists. They should be more well-known at this point, you know?
Maybe you could do something about that. Like, some sort of a, like a, what do you call it? When people, like a flash mob. Like, you could do, like, a flash piece where you just show up at these churches and you, in the middle of the sermon or whatever they do in church, I don't know, you run in and you point to everything and say, you know, this beautiful work was brought to you by...
Yeah, that would be kind of fun.
And what would happen?
That would ruin my parents' business. But yeah.
You think?
Definitely. Yeah. I think the priest would be like, well, we're never hiring them again. Well, that's why it's so touchy, because it's a business, you know? Like, the only reason they do it is because they were very young. They actually met doing this business, and they were very young.
They've been doing a long time then, huh?
Oh, yeah, way before me and whatnot, but, which is the only point of reference that I ever have, but anything before me is, anyway.
Well, you know, we're all a bunch of narcissists,
right? That's why we do what we do.
Artists are the most narcissistic people. It's true.
But they've been doing it forever, because... Like, my dad likes to do, his biggest influences are Magritte and Dali, so he loves, you know, surrealism. My mom likes semi-surrealist still lifes, you know, and thanks to me and my collecting, like, she's had a lot of things to play with. And she does, you know, beautiful copper works that are very 1920s Art Deco style. And, you know, so they have, like, this great...
What, like, etchings?
The octopus piece that is down in our kitchen in the laboratory is one of hers. And it's pressed copper. It's worked from both sides. So it's like a three-dimensional piece.
I'll have to look at it when
we get out. I'll show it to you. But, so they do other stuff, but no one knows it for them. You know, because they're busy working all the time. You know, they can't... They unfortunately... I said, like, I would love to have an office job, because then I'd be able to think about art the whole time and then go home and do my art, you know, as opposed to, like, doing art and then doing art and doing art. It does get repetitive as someone that is able to do that, you know, for, like, a standard living. I'm not making a lot of money, so it's not like I'm an artist millionaire, so it's all about my art. No, it's... I do a lot of computer shit for them, you know what I mean? Which is still art, but it's whatever. But I like to think that, like, they're not well known because they're busy working and making this artwork for a reason, instead of just bullshitting about their art. You know, like, their art has a meaning because it's religious, you know, and their private art, they may have something to say about it, but they've been so immersed in that, like, pretentious art world that they don't want to be that, you know, like, I feel that with you. I wouldn't talk to you if I thought that you were pretentious, so don't worry about it.
I could have been at one point.
But you're not, you know, talking to you now. No, I'm talking to you now. You're very
I never was.
Self-deprecating, but... which is, it's, to me, that's more artistic than someone that can explain their work and you can't see it. Like, I can see what you talk about in your art.
Yeah.
When you explain something, I I see it directly in it. It's not, I don't have to stretch my mind for it, which is good.
It is what it is.
It makes me comfortable and happy and excited.
Well, good. I'm glad. I'm really glad that I, you know, at my age, it's exciting to, even if just a handful of people see it, I've been doing this and not doing it even for myself, really. It's just like, I've always written, I've always drawn, just because I'm compelled to. And I used to throw it away.
Yeah.
Now I save it. That's all.
Good.
And now I don't. I write less and I incorporate everything together. But, you know, even if nobody ever saw it or there was ever a chance of anything, I would still be doing it. But I'm glad to have a chance to share it with people. Yeah. And this is the perfect place.
Well, that's the way Toronto Manor is. If nobody saw it, we'd be here anyway. And it's the same thing that you do.
Because it's your house.
And you do your art because it's your art.
And, you know, it's my... And it's like, it's your legacy. You think about it. You don't have kids, do you?
No.
But it's
I always thought about
you
it.
You may. And
I'd like them.
You think about... you know what I like to think about if the world... If we don't destroy ourselves first. But, you know, like my great-grandchildren say. And, my grandmother would do this legless, naked woman with a penis coming out of her mouth. You know?
Yeah.
So,
I always wanted to be more a grandfather than an actual father. I thought that would be better.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like with my kids. I love them when they were babies, and I love them when they were little. But I like them so much more as they get older.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to go back to one thing, and then we're going to take off. It's my mom's birthday weekend. But one thing, you know. You meet people in the art world and you meet artists and you meet, you know, collectors and stuff, and they walk around like they're, and you just want to shake them and say, you know what, it's fucking art.
Yeah.
You're not saving the world. You're not curing like horrible disease. You're not feeding starving people. It's fucking art. So you can draw better than anybody else. So that doesn't make you better than anybody else.
Yeah.
And you just want to smack these people. And I'm so glad that when I was younger, if somebody had given me a chance to, you know, be part of that world, I would have jumped at it.
Yeah.
You know, because I was an introvert with no friends. But now it's like, I meet these people because I actually, the jobs that I do, I have met some people in the arts, and I just want to smack them all.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know.
Well, to me, that's the saddest thing is you saying that, because we shouldn't feel that way. As artists, we shouldn't feel that way. We should feel like scientists. We should feel like we're changing the world. You know, but inherently. You know, like it's we should be allowed to feel that way.
It's when you think about it, you know,
without being a pretentious dickhole.
Yeah. You know?
Or at least perceived as such.
Even people like Basquiat, like you were saying, you know, he was a street kid, but he turned into a pretentious asshole at the end. You know.
Yeah.
It always reminds me of an old Saturday Night Live. John Lovitz plays Picasso in the skit. He's like sitting at a table in Paris, and he's like blowing his nose and he's giving it to people like, I'm Picasso, you know. He pays for his meal by, you know, like wiping his mouth on a napkin or whatever. It's just like,
that was a very like Warhol era way to be. That's strange that they chose Picasso over Warhol.
Well, Warhol, I don't know how you feel about him, but
I appreciate him.
I like him as a, like, I have a lot of books about him. I have books by him. I have his diaries.
Yeah.
Not because I like his art or appreciate it, but just because he was a fascinating person.
As a person,
he was the most, like, robotic human being, shallow. But everything he had to say is really fun to read.
Did you see The Mighty Boosh? Have you ever watched that?
Nah.
Because they have on there an Andy Warhol robot. It's, you know, it's a guy playing an Andy Warhol robot, and it's very fitting because, like you said, he was very mechanical.
He was
like a robotic person.
And he would send people out like, go find some ideas for me. Like, he couldn't even come up with his own ideas because I think he was a sociopath. Like a sociopath.
Yeah.
Like, he had no feelings or emotions.
Yeah, there's something missing there. Yeah.
A lot missing. But he knew how to manipulate people. And I'm always really interested in people that... That's why I like serial killers.
Yeah.
People that are able to manipulate people like that.
I think we need more of them.
Yeah, I could tell them where I could send them to the right neighborhood.
if I died at the hands of a serial killer, I'd be happy because it meant something. It wasn't just some random act of death.
It's true.
Know? I think it's neater.
You are part of that person's art? I mean, these
Very large extent, yeah.
I know a lot about serial killers. Like, I have every book that I could ever find about them, haunted magazines. I have documentaries.
Do you have the trading cards?
I didn't know there were.
You don't have the serial killer trading cards?
Some do. I don't have them.
There's one company that does them, and there's another company that made them in coffin shape, so I have those.
Where do you get those?
Some comic websites, I'm sure.
Yeah,
so long since I've had them.
Well, I actually need some, you know. I'll show you a couple of pieces. I actually have two pieces that I want to put up that have a small thumbnail sketch of Ted Bundy's morgue picture.
Yeah.
I'll show you that. And then I have another piece that I did that has... some little sketches of different serial killers. And the piece is actually comparing serial killers to people who process meat.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, serial killers will get their victims and sometimes they'll, like, cage them in a way, you know. Keep them pent up and they'll starve them and they'll do whatever they do before they kill them. And we do the same thing. You know,
please don't tell me you're a vegetarian.
Oh, absolutely not, man. I love meat. But it's just, you know.
This conversation is going to go really dark.
No, I love meat. I wear cat bones around my neck.
Good.
I do love meat. Yeah. Not real bloody, but I do like meat. It's just, you know, I always think about how inhumane people can be. I'm always really inspired by inhumanity, even if I don't like it. But I did do a piece about how we're just a bunch of serial killers
animals when you look down to it. And the fact that we can hold that back is the most insane part of humanity.
Yeah.
That we can not kill somebody that pisses us off.
Well, like, that's when you appreciate religion. Thank God there is something in place that keeps a lot of crazy people like, I don't want to burn in hell, so I'm not going to kill this person.
Right.
Because, you know,
there's a lot of things.
Religion.
If I knew there was no religion, there's a lot more I'd do. If I knew there was no jail, there'd even be more things that I would do.
We should have grown up in the Old West.
Tell me about it. I preach that constantly.
Yeah.
I miss the Old West.
Yeah, but you know what? Women worked like dogs in the Old West. You were either a prostitute or you were stuck at home weaving clothes and, you know.
I'm not a woman, so I still long for this.
I bet you do.
Not that I'm that big a misogynist, but, you know. I like the lawlessness of it. I think that's why people nowadays are so excited and so infatuated with the end of the world movies, the apocalypse movies, because they're like, well, shit, then I can do whatever I want. Because
there are
more rules than we could ever handle nowadays.
And
it's only getting worse.
It is only getting worse. Like, the rules just... we're turning into a society where... this is why, like, this podcast, whatever, that's cool.
Yeah.
But these people are putting every aspect of their lives out there for everyone to look at. Like, young people today, talk about narcissism. It's like, everyone wants to hear your every... But all of your shit is out there. And if you don't think that somebody may be watching you at some point... I maybe it's the old-fashioned part of me, but I just don't think that we're supposed to, like, tell everybody our business and put everything out there, and,
The only stuff that I put out there is Toronto Manor stuff.
Well, that's cool.
Like, I promote, like, the house and my art that I'm doing here. I don't really care if people know what I ate for the morning. I don't give a shit. Why would I care?
What? You don't think everybody else wants to know? Come on. Everybody wants to know what Mr. Arm had for breakfast.
Eventually, maybe, but... But I think like putting out stuff like this, and like if you were putting out stuff about your art, and you know, Vel was putting out stuff about her, you know, her costumery and stuff like that. Like that's cool.
That's right? One thing.
People should do that. But you're paying
all your bills online, and like all of your info is out there.
Do you really care though?
People have gotten fired by you know, posting pictures of themselves like smoking weed at a party or whatever.
They shouldn't be posting those.
Well, exactly. Like this generation is so foolish.
As long as you're like, you know, up on what's going on and you're not, you know, Santa Claus and unaware of this shit, then, you know.
I think that
you should just know that you shouldn't be posting weed pictures.
I think each successive generation is getting further away from like
or get a different
real
job,
truth about stuff. It's just like you know, you get on the bus. Like I drive a bus or ride a bus right now because you know my car's broken down, and I just watch everybody on the bus doing that, and I hear little tweeters like all through the bus, like people sending tweets, and it's like, how is everybody like so narcissistic that
they think that people care.
Everybody has to know everything about them all the time.
I tweet stuff and I post pictures, you know, and again, it's all manor-centric because that's essentially the house is me, you know. So I do a lot of that stuff and I don't look at anyone else's. Like, I don't scroll Facebook or Twitter and I think, like, who the fuck is doing this? But next to me, Velda is staring at Facebook for hours and looking at other people's things. So I know people do that. I just, like, I can't bring myself to give a shit.
Yeah, you know? Me either.
I care about humanity, I just don't care about humans.
I agree. I'm kind of, it's like dogs. Like, I don't like dogs, but I like individual dogs.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a dog, I won't love your dog, but looking at dogs. See, I guess it's
I think
opposite.
Dogs are gross. I think they're disgusting and I hate
them. They stink. They eat their own shit.
Yep.
They lick each other's ass.
I've never stepped in cat shit. I've stepped in dog shit.
Exactly. I love cats.
Yeah.
But dogs and they're
I like
needy.
Tiny dogs because they're funny.
See, I hate
But them. Other than that, I don't care. If there's a tiny dog I can laugh at, that's okay. But if it's a big dog with his tongue hanging out and it's shitting and slobbering and dropping its hair on everything, no, I don't want to touch you ever. You know, people just know to put their dogs away when
that's
I come
funny.
Around.
Yeah. See, I don't know. My sister has a Great Dane named Daisy who I love her. You know, she's getting old. She's getting ready to probably die soon. And
if they didn't smell so bad,
Daisy.
I wouldn't be so.
They stink.
And they
who
just
needs
everything
that?
About them smells.
Everything.
Their skin.
And there's no shit that smells worse than dog shit. And you know, you step in it, and the smell, and you get it
just
in your
stuck.
Car, you can't get it out. Yeah, dogs, and they just
pet me, take
me for a walk.
I'm freaking out about the dog culture nowadays, and the fact that like everybody has a dog, or wants a dog, or thinks dogs are great, and wants to wear a sweater with a dog on it, and you know, and. I can't take it. It's getting to me so bad nowadays. And my parents got one recently, and it's ruining my life.
What is it? What kind of dog?
I don't know. It's one of the shitty mixes that's big and black and just like dog shaped, you know, short haired and dog. I don't know what the fuck. But it barks and it whines and it, you know,
you
drinks
may as well
its
have a kid, right?
It drinks its water like it's, you know, like it's fucking a giant. You know, anus rolling around in a you know, bowl of Jello or something.
I agree.
Not that I don't like anuses, but
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
But anyway, enough of this. So I'm gonna cut this short because I think that we've been talking for probably an hour, which is good, and I can keep talking. I wish that your daughter would have said more things, but I understand being that age, so it's okay.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward, Sharon, to your awesome art show that is coming up.
I'm excited.
And this podcast won't do anything to advertise that, but we'll try.
Okay. It was fun to do.
Since this is the first one.
You know, I've always been an introvert, so.
Well, it was fun
to talk and pretend that nobody else was hearing me.
Yeah, this office is good for that.
Yeah.
So, how do you say your last name? Bergmark?
Bergmark, yes.
Okay, Sharon Bergmark, we will see you for your opening show. I'm sure I'll see you before that, but the listeners, if they're out there, are going to see you.
Thanks for
your show. And we are going to hopefully squeeze past whatever the fuck tour is downstairs.
we will. I want to take a look at the thing that you're, the octopus. It's my favorite.
Oh, yeah. I'll lead you down to
that. All right. I hope everybody comes to the show. Come to Trundle Manor. It's awesome. You'll love it if you've never been here.
Yes. Well, there you have it, Trundle Files. I am Mr. Arm, and I would like to thank you on behalf of Velda von Minx, my other half, and myself for joining us for our very first Trundlecast, the podcast brought to you from the attic of Trundle Manor itself. I want to remind you to visit trundlemanor.com for all your future Trundle needs, such as being able to book a tour, checking out future events such as Sharon Bergmark's pen and ink drawing, art show that's going to be showing on April 18th, and other future art shows and events that we'll be having. I know that we have some movie nights coming up that are only for friends, but as long as you're a friend of the manor, you're a friend of mine. So feel free to join that if you'd like. Those are on various Wednesdays. You'll see that online. I want to ask everyone if they'd like to send in their stories about Trundle Manor and how they got to know us. And if it was a good or bad experience, I don't care. I want to read them on the air so everybody can get the same feeling that you did when you first got to check out Trundle Manor. Send in also cover art if you think of things that would benefit yourself and Trundle Manor as being part of our podcast, and show off some of your artwork. We'd love to have it. I think what I'm going to do is put some of our younger artists on the covers for our future ones. I know that we have a few good young artists that frequent Trundle Manor. And just to say, our music is from Kevin MacLeod from Incomputech. Same guy produced some of the behind-the-scenes music of a few podcasts that I started off with, that actually started my fascination with such things. So make sure to check them out if you need any kind of background music for your events or your casts. And again, I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope as well that you have a wonderful and weird rest of your night. For Trundle Manor, Velda von Minx, and the whole Trundle crew, I'm Mr. Arm. Good evening.